agenda item 3, the Carmel Area Wastewater District. And folks, because this is an information discussion item and there will be no board action, I'm going to try to encourage us to get through this within 45 minutes. This will be coming back to the board at some point, I'm sure, for a board decision, and at that time we may have more time in which to devote to it. But it's just informational and for board discussion at this point in time. And I do have something to read regarding Dr. Hunter's involvement with this. And let's see. Here it is. Dr. Hunter, who is our board member on this far side, for those of you who don't know her, has been involved in the Carmel River watershed planning efforts over the last 3 years. Dr. Hunter is a board member of the Carmel River Watershed Conservancy and is the Central Coast Regional Coordinator for the Planning and Conservation League Foundation. Her work has focused on the Carmel River. Other members of the Carmel River Watershed Conservancy have been active in the Lagoon Group action over the past 2 years. As a board, the Conservancy has broadly supported all feasible and legal efforts to improve habitat in the lagoon, but Dr. Hunter has not engaged directly in this effort. Dr. Hunter has not had any discussions with any member of the public about the recent request to allow CAWD to discharge to the lagoon, other than to refer interested persons to the Water Board's executive officer, Mr. Briggs. Her only involvement with this issue is as a member of the Central Coast Water Board. So Dr. Hunter is going to remain on the board to hear this item, but I would like to know if there's any member of the audience that has any objection to her doing so. Okay, seeing no objections, we will move on. Dr. Hunter, you're on the board for this item. Okay. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. As our chair said, this is not an action item today. There will be action coming back or proposed for action in December, I believe. But we didn't have a chance at our last board meeting in July in Watsonville when we were up here to discuss the issue of the Carmel River. At that time, we had hoped we'd be able to have an action, and we were unable to, mostly because of environmental documentation issues. And so Matt Keeling has prepared a written report, which he's going to be relying on a lot in terms of all the background, but he will be just summarizing where we are today and how we intend to move forward. So Matt Keeling of our staff.
Thank you, Roger. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm going to try to be real brief here, as Roger said. I'd also like to add that there are various stakeholders for this issue that are available as part of this discussion as well, and we can bring them forward as needed during the discussion. To discuss some of the what I see as the critical issues and where we go from here. Let's see. I just put together an aerial photograph just to kind of give you a lay of the land. I'm assuming that most of you are fairly familiar with kind of the upstream impacts resulting in reduced Carmel River flows. The lagoon itself, here's the main part of the lagoon. There's a south arm. It also kind of reaches up into here. And then this portion, the Odello extension, was recently rehabilitated by California Department of Parks and Recreation, who owns and manages the lagoon property. It's Carmel River and the Carmel Area Wastewater District Wastewater Treatment and Reclamation Facility is conveniently located immediately adjacent to the lagoon habitat. What happens in the late winter, early spring, the lagoon mouth closes off due to deposited sand from winter storms and decreased flows in the Carmel River. The steelhead smolt that are returning back to the ocean are trapped in the lagoon until the mouth opens again in the late fall, early winter, when they return out to the ocean. So during the summer months, there's reduced flow into the lagoon habitat and reduced freshwater input. So the water level in the lagoon is dictated by tidal and wave action via the sandbar interface here. So the lagoon doesn't dry up. I was originally led to believe that the lagoon was actually going to dry up and all the fish were going to die, and that's not necessarily the case. But throughout the summer, the lagoon becomes increasingly more saline. And as I mentioned, it doesn't dry up, and the level never gets below approximately 2 feet. In 2004, California American Water Company helped support financially the Carmel Area Wastewater District to put in a dechlorination facility and an outfall at the end of its tertiary system for discharge to the adjacent lagoon habitat, and we authorized that via their existing water reclamation requirements, and the intent is to augment water into the lagoon via percolation through the habitat itself, and that's been ongoing since 2004 each spring and summer. A discharge was also initiated last week, and I believe it's currently ongoing. The problem is that they can only discharge for approximately 2 hours before they get a surface water channel that reaches the lagoon, and that's prohibited without an MPDS permit. So that significantly limits the amount of available recycled water into the lagoon, lagoon habitat. Each spring and summer, the Carmel Area Wastewater District and Regional Board staff get increasing pressure from various stakeholders, primarily the Carmel River Steelhead Association, to release more recycled water to the lagoon. However, no single entity with the requisite funding and management structure has stepped forward to take the necessary steps to submit an application for us to evaluate a permit for an MPDS discharge into the lagoon habitat. For its part, the Carmel Area Wastewater District has been willing for some time to give this water at no additional cost, but they can't justify having the ratepayers bear the burden of any additional costs related to the permitting and this discharge, given other agencies are responsible for managing the lagoon and mitigating impacts as a result of decreased Carmel River flows. I'm just going to jump past this slide real quick, but I just wanted to point out one piece of information that I kind of came upon a number of weeks ago, and that is that there's really no data supporting that decreased freshwater inputs to the lagoon are causing increased steelhead mortality. In fact, some of the reports that I've seen from the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District indicate that steelhead populations have actually increased since 1992. And so the stated need for increased freshwater inputs to the lagoon are based on a premise of what a healthy steelhead habitat is, and that increased salinity within the lagoon may adversely affect the habitat due to increased stratification and increased temperature and reduced dissolved oxygen. So in the absence of any single entity coming forward to kind of take charge of this process, the Carmel Area Wastewater District Manager, Ray Von Dorn, and I decided late last year that we would try to add in the lagoon discharge into their scheduled update of their MPDS permit. And in retrospect, this may not have been a good approach. And the most notable reason was that the state implementation evaluation for priority pollutant criteria resulted in effluent limitations for copper, nickel, zinc, cyanide, and mercury that the wastewater district will not be able to meet, and so that's going to preclude them from having a discharge. To try to deal with this issue, I notified the Carmel Area Wastewater District and the Carmel River Steelhead Association, who I was interfacing with at the time in April, that there was a categorical exemption in the state implementation policy that would allow us kind of to get around and work with these priority pollutant effluent limitations. And the primary requirements for that is a nexus to a statutory requirement and California Environmental Quality Act documentation for the discharge. Also, in looking at this, it became apparent that there was a lack of effluent receiving water data that would be required to do this evaluation. And this is something that I probably should have looked at beforehand when I was looking at putting it in the MPDS permit, but it just didn't come up at that time. and that it's probably going to be best to defer the collection of any effluent receiving water data until the wastewater district upgrades its tertiary treatment facility and modifies its secondary treatment system, which is scheduled for completion next spring and summer. From what information I've been able to gather at this point, over the last several weeks, there are three entities that are charged with managing the lagoon habitat and or mitigating the effects on the habitat as a result of reduced Carmel River flows. And each of these entities, as far as I can tell, has a potential nexus to a statutory requirement for augmenting freshwater inputs to the lagoon, and I think would be a suitable candidate to be a project lead for permitting of this discharge. The first would be Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. They adopted a water allocation program, EIR, in 1990 as part of its annual water allocation program. And that document identifies various mitigation measures to reduce impacts to the lagoon vegetation and wildlife. And the one of most interest to us is to identify feasible alternatives to maintain adequate lagoon volume. And I'm not quite sure to what extent the Water Management District has implemented this mitigation measure, and hopefully somebody can expand on this for us in our discussion. There's a nexus to the Water Management District's mitigation program via a State Water Resources Control Board Water Rights Order 9510 that was issued to California American Water in 1995. And basically what it requires is that California American Water to implement any of the mitigation measures that the Water Management District does not implement after 1996. In addition, California Department of Parks and Recreation, as I think I mentioned before, owns the lagoon habitat and lagoon proper property, has some draft documents for a Carmel River Lagoon Water Elevation Adaptive Management Project. And they've also got an associated CEQA document. Now, these are internal drafts that are intended as a management tool for the Carmel River Lagoon Technical Advisory Committee, as I understand it. And I've also been given the impression that these documents were never really intended for public comment and formal adoption. I'm not quite clear as to the reasons why. And again, this is something maybe we can discuss later if the board wishes. As far as where to go from here, I think part of the problem is that all the discussion and exchange of information up to this point has been informal. And so we need to take a couple steps back and formalize the process for the project via a single entity that's willing and able to kind of take charge and responsibility of the discharge. And it's likely to take a couple of years, but I think we need to take the steps that are necessary to implement a scientifically and legally defensible lagoon discharge via an MPDS permit. In the meantime, what I recommend is taking the language out of the draft permit that I currently wrote in for the lagoon discharge, support the ongoing dry habitat discharges so we can still try to get as much water as possible into the lagoon under the existing authorization, and then to facilitate the process towards getting a permit for a direct discharge in the lagoon habitat. And I'm currently prepared to put together a letter to the project proponents outlining all the necessary application requirements that we need to have in hand for us to make the evaluation and draft the permit. And at that point, whoever decides to take charge of the project needs to collect additional effluent receiving water data and submit it along with an application for a discharge permit. Now, once we get the additional data, it may show that the categorical exception for the effluent limits is not necessary. I don't think that's likely, but there is a small chance that may happen. But if not, the lead agency is also going to have to conduct CEQA to get the exemption from the priority pollutant limitations. Otherwise, discharging is going to be a moot point. And at that point, once we evaluate it, we can permit it either by reopening the permit with the wastewater district's approval to add in the lagoon discharge language, or a recent thought that I had just the other day is that we could issue a standalone MPDS permit in the forms of a water reclamation requirements order to the project proponent as a recycled water user, and that would kind of distance the wastewater district from any additional permitting issues beyond their existing role as a recycled water supplier. And with that, I think I'll conclude and we'll get into the discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Any board questions? Mr. Hayashi.
There was a gentleman the last meeting that was here that said that he said that the fish would only last till the end of September if they didn't get additional water. Is this the same guy?
I don't know. Is
I think probably the best person to answer that question, I don't know if Kevin Urquhart, the fisheries biologist for the Monterey Peninsula. Yeah, please come up to the podium.
Well, you know what? We do have a card for him. Why don't we go ahead? Wait a minute.
Go ahead and just take him out of
order.
Go ahead. Why don't you do your presentation and maybe you can address.
Actually, I didn't have a presentation. I'm just available for questions.
Yeah,
like
I had
this.
I had him fill out the cards just to make sure we had correct
Good.
Spelling of their
okay.
names for the minutes and
right.
just on record.
I'm Kevin Urquhart. I'm the senior fisheries biologist of the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, which is a regulatory district with authority over groundwater and surface water resources within the Carmel watershed and the Seaside Groundwater Basin. I've been working for them for about 1 year now, so I'm not an expert on everything with their past histories. But in terms of the Carmel Lagoon, I have been working in the area as a fisheries biologist for about 7 years. And the district is voluntarily monitoring the water quality in the lagoon and tracking it for temperature, dissolved oxygen, salinity, and depth. And depths are getting shallower. Temperatures are getting up to the borderline of lethal range for the fish there. Dissolved oxygen, depending on wind and algae and things like that, is varying from adequate to weak. We don't exactly know when the lagoon conditions are going to go bad for fish, but given that this is a critically dry water year type, as you guys are probably aware, and recalling off the top of my head, I think total outflow in the Carmel River is about 17% of normal. It's likely that sometime this fall, a combination of temperature, salinity, and dissolved oxygen will get to the point where it's lethal for the fish there. It's not necessarily the case that we're going to see a fish kill like you do with a point source pollution incident. The reason for that would be that as temperature gets really hot, as the bottom of the lagoon builds up a saltwater layer that has no oxygen in it, this juvenile steelhead in the lagoon will be forced toward the surface, and basically predatory birds, et cetera, will take them out of the area so that there won't be any visible fish kill. But observational data from fishing game biologists, from NOAA biologists, and from local advocates like the Carmel River Steelheaders, they will go out in low water years like this, see many fish jumping in the lagoon, an abundant resource at the beginning of summer, and then you can go back and snorkel the lagoon in October and November and find almost no fish. They've just vanished. That is probably a product of the situation that I just told you about. Declining water quality conditions, slow, chronic mortality, and encouragement of predation by forcing fish into a very shallow amount of freshwater lens that's sitting on the top of the lagoon. Unfortunately, there's no immediate fish kill to be able to take a tally count and show an event, but conservation of mass. There were fish there in the spring, and there aren't fish there in October in years where there's a water quality challenge like this. So sometime in the months of August, September, or October, conditions could go to lethal for fish in the lagoon.
Is there another way to gauge the health of the steelhead population?
Only long-term data record are at the passage facilities at California American Water's two dams. The district operates in cooperation with CalAM, an electronic fish counting facility at the San Clemente Dam. The California American Water does its own physical counts as it physically handles and traps and trucks fish over the upper dam. The run peaked a few years ago coming back from the last drought in the late 80s at about 840 fish past San Clemente Dam. Our numbers this last year were down to 222 plus fish. Flows were so low we had to pull out the fish counter to prevent fish from actually moving through the ladder. So we ended our count at 222 fish, and some number of fish more than that went by. So, matter of fact, for a number of years in a row, we were seeing about a 5% a year decline in the numbers past San Clemente Dam. In addition, another disturbing trend is the ratio of fish passing Los Padres, the upper dam, as a percentage of fish passing San Clemente, the lower dam, and that ratio is declining. So the absolute numbers of fish making it past the upper Los Padres dam are going down, and it's declining as a percentage of the fish that actually do make it past San Clemente. There's been a little bit of improved spawning in the lower river for the fish due to better water management of the existing limited water supplies in the Carmel. It stays wet a couple miles farther than it used to, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and there are more fish spawning down there, but that hasn't compensated enough to change the numbers that are occurring at San Clemente and Los Padres Reservoir.
I would appreciate it if you could give staff any of the trend data that you have.
Certainly.
So that when this comes back to the board, that we have that in our packet to take a look at. Do you know much about what your agency is doing vis-a-vis the Cal-Am requirement to implement all measures in the water allocation program?
Yeah, matter of fact, I think if we have more detailed questions about the water allocation ER, I'd like our water resources engineer, Larry Hampson, to come up because he's been with the district longer than I have. My understanding of the allocation EIR, which was a process to define allocating the limited water resources of the Carmel among the various users and the resultant mitigations, were that, as Matt said, it has some generalized, you know, you will conduct studies, you will assist in developing you know, approaches to trying to maintain lagoon volume, but it isn't the kind of what do you want to call it, specific deliverables that one often sees in CEQA mitigations, where, you know, you'll plant X number of trees, or you'll, you know, add this treatment process to your facility or whatever. So it so theoretically, if we aren't doing anything that that we're supposed to in our allocation EIR, and it's the position of our board and our managers that we are, and I don't want to address that for you because I'm not a manager, that then theoretically California American Water would have to take over those responsibilities. But California American Water would have to speak to their view of that requirement, because I know they have a differing view of it, but I won't speak for them.
Okay. All right. Any other board questions? Dr. Hunter?
I do have one question for you, Kevin. Thank you for coming this morning. Matt suggested that in the future there could be opportunity to resolve this with perhaps the involvement of one of the other entities responsible for managing the lagoon. Can you characterize what the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District's view is at this point, and are they willing to take the lead on applying for a different type of permit?
I don't know that they are. That would be a question that would have to be directed to our general manager, Mr. Berger, and perhaps he would have to seek concurrence from the district's board before he can answer that question. We are willing to be a cooperator. As a staff person, I can speak at that level in terms of you know, sharing costs of collecting data or trying to find solutions. We do. That's why we participate in the Carmel River Lagoon Technical Advisory Committee, and you know, Dave Berger volunteered to chair it, and we take notes and facilitate that process. So we're certainly very willing to be a cooperator in finding a solution. We're willing to expend staff time and funds within, keyword, within existing budgets. You know, I have limited flexibility and limited amount of money that I can spend within the fisheries program. I do have a small line item allocation for the Carmel Lagoon. So as parties are working together to identify some of the data needs that Matt brought up, we would participate as we could to the degree that I have existing funding.
I also noted that the report that was issued this week by the Peninsula Water Management District noted that National Marine Fisheries Service hasn't authorized fish rescues yet. Can you tell us what the status of that is and how that works into the annual kind of process that occurs in terms of action that can be taken?
Yeah, my small fisheries program with three staff, as part of the requirements of the allocation EIR, conduct rescues from downstream to upstream once flows in the Carmel River decline below 10 cubic feet per second. That's a requirement of the allocation EIR, a physical one. And we take them to a rearing facility in the upper Carmel Valley and rear them there until flows reach a certain level in the lower river again, and then we re-release them. We also voluntarily do rescues in other parts of the river or receive fish from the Karma River steelheaders when they do their own rescues. This year, the steelheaders requested, and we provided the support data to the National Marine Fisheries Service to suggest that it might be wise to do preemptive rescues while water quality conditions were good for fish, and that on the grounds that it was highly probable, I can't give you a percentage, you know, an exact statistical percentage, but it's more than 50% likely that the lagoon will get to conditions where they will not support fish this year, and that we would take them and put them in our facility. The National Marine Fisheries Service in their response letter was concerned that we'd already gotten to the point where lagoon temperatures were high, 21.5 degrees centigrade, which is above the level that most anadromous fisheries biologists say it's good to handle anadromous fish. It's getting too hot. They'll have a high mortality from handling. And they were also concerned about the very low predicted flows in the Carmel River this year. Even though we're managing the water resources as best we can, it's possible we could reach minimum pool in Los Padres Reservoir this year by December, and we're also managing only to maintain over the next few months a minimum flow of 3 cubic feet per second down the Carmel River due to the amount of surface storage available to allocate for environmental water releases. And they were worried that bringing the fish into our facility in the Upper Valley, given these very tenuous conditions in the river, high water temperatures at the facility, et cetera, that the fish might not do well there either. So they decided to gamble on leaving them in the lagoon.
Okay.
And I don't know that they're going to change their position. We provide them water quality data on at least a bi-monthly basis. We're out voluntarily sampling the lagoon on a weekly basis now at 5 locations.
Thank you.
Okay. Matt.
Yeah, I've got a question here, and just an issue I want to bring up. And there's a document that I recently received, and it's a notice of intent to adopt a negative declaration for the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, and it's Ordinance 130. And it maybe they can expand on this, but it appears to me that it's almost providing an incentive not to put any of the excess recycled water into the lagoon habitat. And what the ordinance does is, based on the introduction that I can see, is that it is trying to replace existing non-residential potable water irrigation with subpotable water. And so one of the sources of the new subpotable water source for use within the Carmel area is the Carmel Area Wastewater District's recycled wastewater. I don't know if
As the fisheries program manager within the water resources division, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but the water demand division, which deals with cycling, recycling and water demand management, led by Stephanie Pintar, would be the person to ask that question to. And if you wanted to submit the question by email or in writing, we don't need an official letterhead or anything. I know that they would be glad to respond to your concerns and questions. But I don't deal with the water conservation ordinances, and I'm not involved that process, so I couldn't answer your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Larry Hampson, water resources engineer, may actually be able to answer it.
Why don't you come up to the speaker, the podium, and identify yourself, please. Walk right up.
I didn't fill out a testimony card, but
it's okay. Just give us your name.
For you. My name is Larry Hampson. I'm water resources engineer with the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. There have been a number of questions asked here, and I'll see if I can facilitate some of the answers. Starting out with the 1990 allocation EIR and the mitigation program that was adopted at the time by the district for impacts from water extraction at Carmel Valley. That program identified two actions at the lagoon. First of all, it was monitoring of the lagoon for changes as a result of water extraction. And second, there was a requirement to identify what volume of water would be needed at the lagoon to maintain steelhead habitat in an adequate condition, and to identify a feasible project to maintain that volume. In a review of the allocation program in 1996, there was no project identified that was feasible to maintain adequate volume at the time. However, there's more information on the changes in the lagoon and what sort of volumes we were looking at. There was a question about what's the district's responsibilities vis-a-vis Order 9510 by the State Board. The program was adopted in 1991, the allocation program, mitigation program. And in 1995, the State Board was aware that there was legislation pending to dissolve the Water Management District, and they ordered Cal-Am to take action if the Water District were to be dissolved and take over the mitigation program. Well, of course, the Water District wasn't dissolved, and the Water District has reaffirmed its commitment to the mitigation program on a number of occasions, 2004 most recently. At this time, my understanding of sort of the status of the mitigation program is that the Water District cannot change its program without going back and reviewing the EIR and actually making a change under CEQA. So all of the actions that are included in this program will continue until such time as there's a review and a change under CEQA, which brings about the question of, well, can the Water District go forward with a project at the lagoon under its 1990 EIR? Last year, the Water District Board reviewed that EIR with the idea that, well, is it going to be changed? Is it going to be reviewed? Are we going to have a supplemental EIR? And they determined that if the EIR were reviewed or there was a supplemental or some other action under CEQA, it could be challenged in court, and meaning that the whole process would be opened up for review. And the 1990 EIR was a it was a long and difficult process for the district board to come to an adoption of a mitigation program. So rather than take the risk of a challenge to that EIR, the district has decided not to open that EIR up for review. However, the district does recognize its responsibility in carrying out mitigations and in trying to restore the steelhead habitat. Currently, we're facilitating an integrated regional water management plan that includes this lagoon area and what we call the Lower Carmel River Restoration Project. What we are trying to do is come up with a comprehensive program to manage the lower part of the river that includes a request for $850,000 in to the state for studies to carry out a long-term adaptive management program at the lagoon. This is all currently in a beginning stage. We're discussing various alternatives. Recently, the district met with COD, the Carmel Area Wastewater District, and the Big Sur Land Trust to talk about the potential of using the tertiary treated water or the water that's coming out of the new process upstream of Highway 1 and creating a retention basin there and trying to use that water to keep a retention basin filled and perhaps percolate water into the groundwater. These are preliminary discussions. We want to see if there's a feasible project still to do with the lagoon, but apparently it's just not going to work at this time to take the discharge and put it directly into the lagoon. I mean, Matt's made it pretty clear that that can't happen. So we are looking at other alternatives, and we will continue to do that. We're looking for funding. We're looking to establish a group such as a Carmel River Trust or some organization that can take on the responsibility of comprehensively managing the lagoon. Currently, the responsibility for managing this area is split up among the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, California Department of State Parks, Monterey Peninsula Water Management. NOAA Fisheries is involved. There are a number of different agencies, all with different responsibilities, but there's no single agency that can comprehensively manage this, and we want to help facilitate some sort of organizational structure to do that. So I hope that wasn't too long-winded for you.
Thank you for those comments. Mr. Urquhart, question for you. I noticed from the staff report that really what's available is 1.5 MGD 4 days out of the month. Is that sufficient?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. It's a good question. It's been asked before. And as part of my regular responsibilities, I haven't had the time to sit down and try and do, you know, mass balance volume calculations and figure out whether that dilution factor would create, you know,
favorable
adequate, you know, its net benefit. Conceptually, I believe it will, but I have to be honest, I haven't had time to sit down and do those kinds of calculations with the assistance of, you know, a hydrologist or engineering geologist to, you know, make a finite statement of, yes, it's going to improve water quality by X percent, which is, of course, you know, a question that I'm sure you would like answered.
Well, I think it would be helpful to know whether we're chasing the right remedy for this, or maybe something else should be employed. Matt?
When I started looking at some of the data and trying to evaluate the feasibility of the categorical exception, one of the things that I kind of wanted to look at was the mass balance of the water inputs. And based on some of the information that I've gotten from the stakeholders is that at the critical stage that the lagoon is now currently at, it contains approximately 20 acre feet mm-hmm. of water. And 1.5 MGD is approximately about 4 to 5 acre feet a day. And if they're doing that for 4 or 5 days, you'd be adding enough water that would be the equivalent of what's already in the lagoon habitat. So I think it would be significant.
But that would be over a 30-day period.
Well, no. Actually, what happens is they do it 4 to 5 days every month, and then they
correct.
Shut it off. So say, you know, tomorrow they start discharging, and they'll discharge for 5 days, and it'll be about 4 acre feet a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're talking, you know,
right.
between 16 and 20 acre feet
so
per week in a given month, but only for 1 week.
Right, right. That I followed,
mm-hmm. yeah.
But and that's kind of what my question, you know, was mm-hmm. geared towards. Is that really sufficient if you go back to the way it was for a 3 week period of time?
Yeah. Well, given it's what do you say? There's 3 cubic feet per second now that's coming in. That's
don't know what underflow
how much
is.
Reach is
actually,
it? Yeah.
We're releasing about a half a cubic foot per second. Ballpark is natural flow into Los Padres. The rest is California American water releasing from storage. That water makes it, I'm trying to remember the river miles right now, approximately river mile 10 to 12 upstream there, and then goes subsurface. I was recently told by our engineering geologist that the subsurface water flow is about 2 feet a day. So what's currently seeping into the lagoon probably has nothing to do with the releases that are going subsurface up valley.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We've got 3 speaker cards. We'll get through those and then try to wrap things up. Ken Gray.
Good morning. I'm Ken Gray. I'm a planner with California State Parks, which has been mentioned before, is the landowner for the Carmel Lagoon area. This property is part of Carmel River State Beach. And I wanted to just mention that over the last 10 years or so, various state agencies, including Caltrans, the Coastal Conservancy, the Department of Fish and Game Wildlife Conservation Board, and state parks have invested about $8 million in trying to restore habitat in the lower Carmel Lagoon area. The Odello extension you can see in the photograph was completed in 2004, in which we significantly increased the size and volume of the lagoon. And then in 2005, a technical advisory committee was formed to address management of the lagoon. But I want to emphasize that the impetus for creating that technical advisory committee was issues related to county water resource agencies and Public Works Department managing the sandbar at the lagoon to prevent flooding of low-lying homes adjacent to the lagoon. It really wasn't directly related to the water quality issues and the discharge of wastewater to the treated wastewater to the lagoon. Subsequently, we've gotten more involved in that, working with COD and Matt's provided us a lot of good advice on that. Matt did mention the existence of some draft internal documents, an adaptive management plan and a draft CEQA document. Those were prepared to try to help facilitate discussions within the TAC committee about strategies that could be employed to obtain permits for from the Corps of Engineers and the Coastal Commission and the Department of Fish and Game related to managing the sandbar to in a way that would continue to allow the county to prevent flooding of low-lying homes adjacent to the lagoon while at the same time trying to enhance fisheries habitat in the lagoon. So I think it's been a good discussion that Matt has added to us the information about the requirements for possible wastewater discharges and what it would take to do that, and we may ultimately come up with documents and permit applications that will allow us to do that, but it will take a partnership between several agencies to contribute funding to gather the data and so forth. So we're all trying to work cooperatively together. There is a shortage of funding and mandates for the particular agencies to justify funding for the necessary studies, but we are working toward that. A long-term study plan has been prepared, and there is actually lobbying going on at this, the state legislature level to try to secure funding for various studies that are thought to be necessary to implement the study plan that we've identified. So,
thank you very much. Any questions from the board? Okay, thank you.
I've got a question.
Mr. Briggs has a question for you.
Both you and the district have indicated that it would take a partnership, cooperative relationship, something like that, in order to go forward. At least that's what I'm reading kind of between the lines. Neither one of you said we'll be the sequel lead. So what about some kind of a joint powers arrangement or being co-leads for the CEQA process?
Well, the Monterey County and State Parks have agreed to submit joint applications for the breaching activity at the lagoon, and we just had a meeting about a month ago, and the county resource agencies and my boss with State Parks did agree that we would be joint applications for that. That does not get into the water quality analysis issues, but I think we're willing to certainly discuss that. And the TAC committee that we already have is a mechanism for discussion. I think other partner agencies like the Water Management District have indicated they're willing to cooperate in that regard. So I think we may be able to develop a partnership that would work.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hank Smith, followed by Bob Zampatti.
Oops. Good morning. I'm Hank Smith from the Carmel River Steelhead Association. I'd like to thank all of you for the service that you provide for our region to make sure we have clean water. It's not going to take me very long, but I just wanted to kind of outline for you the issues from a layman's standpoint. When Matt mentioned that there was a myth that the lagoon was going to go dry, if there was anything that I said at our Watsonville meeting to suggest that, that was an error on my part. But the fact of the matter is that the water quality conditions essentially could be produce the same results, in that when you have wave over action over coming over the beach, salt water is heavier than fresh water, and as a consequence it presents an environment where these fish cannot survive. And as Kevin mentioned earlier, what you have then is a freshwater lens, if you will. And since we have very little fresh water moving into the lagoon, these fish, since they need fresh water, they will move to the surface. And that also is because it's near the surface, it's warmer than all the rest. So you have not only a lack of fresh water for these creatures, but the temperature is such that it's difficult, if not will become impossible, for them to survive. So it's an environment that is tough for them. we're in this situation this year because of obviously a dry water year, and because of that, there wasn't many days that the mouth of the river flowed out to the ocean. So we have a few number of fish that are trying to sustain their population. So that's part of the issue that we face this year. The Steelhead Group has done everything that we possibly can to ensure the survivability of this species. And by the way, it is unique to the Carmel River. There is no other fish that has the DNA structure that this fish has. So that's one of the reasons why we get as motivated as we do to make sure that this species survives. What have we done? A lot since we met. We met with you in Watsonville last month. We've turned on the aerators, which are the power for those are given to us generously by the Carmel Area Wastewater District. But that's limited because you have to be careful that you don't, when you turn on those aerators, that you don't suck up some of the salt water that's at the bottom. So it's a delicate kind of an operation. We've requested NOAA to give us permission, as Kevin mentioned earlier. We sent a separate letter to Dick Butler in Santa Rosa asking if we could participate in a fish rescue and move those fish up to the Sleepy Hollow facility, which is up in the Upper Carmel Valley.
Could you wrap it up, Mr. Smith?
Yep, you betcha.
Thank you.
I think that's pretty much it. If there's something that you can do to mitigate this, you know, it's not a long-term type project that we're asking for right now. These fish potentially will not be with us if we can't do something right away.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Mr. Shallcross has a question for you.
Now, it seems to me that there's a couple things here that might be at cross purposes, and maybe I don't understand it. When the fish are in the lagoon, and then in the winter when the lagoon gets full and they breach the beach, when Public Works breaches, does that affect the fish?
You mean when the county breaches the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it does affect it. If they breach it the way they have been in the past, Their major concern is that the lagoon doesn't flood houses,
right.
And they'd like, you know, I think if you look at it from their perspective, if they don't have to come back, then it cuts their costs. So they typically will breach it directly out to the ocean. Well, what does that do? If you're familiar with the water, what the water has effects on the sand, it digs it. Deep channel, which essentially blows out the whole lagoon. There's a whole bunch of creatures that the fish feed on, amphipods, other things that create an environment so that if they can spend 4 to 6 weeks in the lagoon during their juvenile life stage, their chances of returning back as adults is significantly improved. And I don't want to cite the statistical figure of them returning, but that is that's the problem, because once that water leaves the soil in the lagoon, those other creatures that they depend upon for food are killed off. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat, yeah. So you said if they do it straight out, is there another way that would be better?
Absolutely, and we've suggested that, and we've negotiated with them, and unfortunately with no avail right now. We've suggested that they cut a diagonal, that they go ahead and breach it, but they cut a diagonal channel. And in fact, we did that ourselves with permission of California Department of Fish and Game and also NOAA this past spring. because there were a number of fish that were there and they wanted to get out. We could see them. They were very close to the beach, and we cut a diagonal channel. We got a donation of a caterpillar from Monterey Peninsula Engineering, and we cut a channel, a diagonal channel that went, don't hold me to this figure, but it was like a couple hundred yards. And that channel was maintained. It didn't blow out the lagoon, and a lot of fish got out by using that method. So it is proven, but it needs to be managed, and that takes personnel and equipment time for the county, and thus far they've not looked upon that with a great deal of enthusiasm.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Mr. Zampatti.
I'm Robert Zampatti with the Carmel River Steelhead Association. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today, and thank you for the support you've given the concept of using tertiary treated water. I know that based upon the Watsonville meeting that you are certainly sympathetic toward the need here. Our purpose is conserving the Carmel River and its important steelhead fishery. Your purpose is for working for water quality, but we share a common interest because steelhead depend on a supply of cool, clear water. We human beings are a complex species. We develop laws to protect ourselves from ourselves, and sometimes we tie ourselves in knots in so doing. I think that's the position that we find ourselves. I've read the staff report. I believe it really fails to get to the heart of the matter, and it takes way too long. We're losing this summer, and we're likely to lose next summer if things go according to plan, and usually our best laid plans don't come as soon as we'd like them to anyway. Copper, zinc, and nickel and cyanide are not man-made products. They occur in nature. We believe that what needs to be done here to get to the heart of the matter is to test the water in the lagoon and test the water in the ocean and find out to what degree these minerals occur in the other two bodies of water besides the tertiary treated water. I understand that these elements or metals occur in the ocean to substantially higher degree than in the tertiary treated water. So, and since the ocean overlaps the beach with regularity during the summer, that the concentration of these metals in the lagoon has a very good chance of being higher than the tertiary treated water. So putting tertiary treated water into the lagoon doesn't increase the concentration, but decreases it. So it seems to me that what's needed to get to the heart of the matter more expeditiously and perhaps cheaper is to simply test the water in the lagoon and test the water in the ocean and make a comparison with that of the tertiary treated water. Does that mean I run out of time?
You could wrap it up.
I think the experts who've looked at this problem agree that putting the treated water into the lagoon is a good idea. Now is the chance for us as a group and you as a particular body to apply some common sense to this solution and not get ourselves all tied up in knots. I view your role as similar to that of a jury at a trial. You're a jury of our peers. Read the report, analyze it, but apply some common sense to the thing so that we can take a useful resource, tertiary treated water, and put it in the lagoon where a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act is trying to survive. And I've worked on the river for many, many years. I know that more water, more fresh, cool water into that lagoon will help fish, and I think it will be a substantial help. I've been at the water treatment plant up to my knees in tertiary treated water, watching the amount of water flow into the lagoon or toward the lagoon, and that's a lot of water, a lot more water than flows down the Carmel River this time of year. Thank you.
Mr. Zampata, you know, we are tied in a knot, and unfortunately the staff report, I think, was pretty clear that if the discharge is allowed by way of an NPDES permit, that the discharger would be automatically in violation of discharge limits based on the metals that were presented here. So
I understand
we
that
we don't have the discretion.
I understand your dilemma, and I, you know, I feel like I'm appearing before the the wrong group because, you know, fish aren't your responsibility. What I'm trying
they are a beneficial use, and we are empowered to protect them.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
The challenge for this board is to get a handle on how we can do that.
Right. And
we're going to have that discussion in a minute.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is that there needs to be a dose of common sense applied to the knot that we have tied ourselves in. The laws get in the way of common sense. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I have no more speaker cards.
Well, Mr. Zampati's suggestion was to answer the question, the supposition that it's probably okay. We think it's probably okay, too, from a gut-level standpoint, but that's what Mr. Keeling was pointing out as one of our necessary steps going forward was to collect the data, and his proposal was for whichever agency is going to be the lead going forward to collect that data. So we identified that as a needed step. We're in agreement on that point. As you heard, both parks and the district are possibly interested in partnering to do that. But I think that's one of the most immediate questions as far as going forward.
The question I have for our attorney is this. Fish habitat, cold water habitat are beneficial uses. We do have an impact to those beneficial uses in terms of water quality, if you want to consider quantity of water and flow rate of water and temperature as impacts. What can the board do more directly with this situation? I mean, there's a discharger who's not doing anything wrong, so we don't really have leverage over the discharger. But we do have a water purveyor removing water in excess of a permit. I know that's up at the state board, and it's not in our hands, but that's an entity. Do we have any leverage over CalAmm?
Not based on their withdrawals of water. That's regulated by the state board, and this board doesn't have any jurisdiction.
What can we do, if anything, more direct to protect the beneficial use that is threatened?
Nothing.
We can't make a finding.
You can use your bully pulpit. Staff can participate in the stakeholder groups, but in terms of regulatory actions, you can approve requests for discharges that are brought before the board, but that's it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Mr. Shallcross?
Aren't there any emergency powers for emergency situations?
For this board to require discharges?
Well, to allow discharges.
No. No, there would not be any exception to the NPDES requirements. And even if it's the case that this discharge would actually dilute metal concentrations in the lagoon, you still can't authorize discharges in excess of water quality objectives that are in the SIP without doing an exception. Before you can grant an exception, someone has to do a CEQA document, and if there's no other lead agency, it would have to be this board. because the effluent limits for metals in the SIP are based on toxicity to aquatic life, in my opinion, there would be a mandatory finding of significance for this discharge, which means that you have to do an EIR. So it's a pretty extensive environmental study, because the steelhead aren't the only aquatic life in the lagoon.
Dr. Hunter.
Well, I had the same idea as far as thinking through an emergency scenario. But I also wanted to understand the exception option. COD has decided they don't want to take that risk. But the issue that Mr. Zampatti raised is to determining what the quality of the receiving waters is. Would that have any play into the opportunity to recognize an exception under the current permit? Although I see that COD's permit is expiring. So once their permit expires, does that have any effect on what we're trying to do here?
No, the permit's going to be renewed under the normal course for NPDES permits of five-year renewals, but the current discharge point is the ocean. It doesn't include this discharge. If for some reason that's delayed, it'll go on administrative extension. So as part of that renewal, staff and the stakeholders were thinking that this additional discharge point could be added. They don't have to be tied together. It could be done as a separate permitting action. In terms of studying the receiving water quality, that definitely fits into the exception process, because we have to know that for the CEQA analysis.
Mm-hmm. So it is part of CEQA. So mm-hmm. We're still back to someone taking the lead on that.
Right.
COD has refused. The county hasn't stepped forward. The other entities are considering. Okay. So we're looking at two more summers, probably.
If we're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about this? My thought was at least what the board can do is to send a letter to the state board and, impress upon them the threat that we have perceived after receiving testimony to the steelhead habitat, and to at least get them to respond, that they, take a hard look at the amount of water that's being, withdrawn by CalAM, and to possibly, through some of the summer months, create some limitations to their withdrawal, or do something that would help the beneficial use. Now, we're talking about a little bit of water here. I don't know if CalAM uses recycled water at all.
CalAM uses everything it can get its hands on, as far as I know. The problem is they do have a water rights permit, and they're in violation of their allocation limits. The state board's problem in enforcing those limits is that it would impair the water supply for the Monterey Peninsula. There wouldn't be enough domestic water to meet the current needs. So CalAM's been in violation of their withdrawal requirements for many years. Order 9510 includes some mitigation requirements, not just in the lagoon, but throughout the area of the river impacted by these withdrawals. And I think it's CalAM and also the Water District. I think Dr. Hunter probably knows more about this than I do. There are mitigation requirements in 9510 for all of the environmental impacts of the withdrawals. And as the district representative said, there was this mitigation plan in 1996, I believe, and the order requires implementation of that plan. But the way it's drafted, it's not clear to me whether that means the studies have to identify whatever feasible lagoon augmentation projects there are, or it means that they have to identify them and do them. I'm not sure how the state board interprets that. I tried to talk to the water rights attorney assigned to this, but wasn't able to get with her before this meeting. So that's one thing they're considering. There's actually a hearing in September where the state board is permitting an aquifer recharge project to try to reduce the burden on the Carmel River of these withdrawals. So it is something that The State Board is looking at, Carmel's exploring various desal options.
Well, so. I think the State Board needs to hear from our board.
I agree.
So I would like staff to prepare a letter to go to the State Board and at least get them to, you know, take a close look at this. And perhaps Cal-Am does have some water that could be swapped over some period of time. Maybe it's not pure potable water. Maybe it's of a slightly lesser quality but could be put into the lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just pulling something out of the air, but I'd like to get that discussion going and put them on notice that there's a impact to a beneficial use that's pending, impending. The other thing is perhaps a letter or at least a phone call back to Monterey County to tell them that when they open the berm up, that at least they do everything they can to minimize any impact to the lagoon habitat.
I think a letter, not just a phone call.
Okay. Well, the letter then.
Okay. We'll
get both those out.
All righty.
And I'd like to take a look at them before they go out.
Okay.
I have one more quick question
for
Matt. I think it was for Matt. Has Cal-Am been a part of these discussions?
I think, not Tom Peterson. I forget. Who was the representative for Cal-Am? Frank, that's on leave now.
Steve Leonard.
He was in some of the initial Carmel River Lagoon Technical Advisory Committee meetings that I listened in on, somewhat silent.
Uh-huh. I mean, they're one of the big players here. That's why we're in this problem. You'd think they'd want to be involved in this.
Yeah, as I said, they did provide financial support for the Carmel Area Wastewater District to facilitate the habitat discharge. So they put up a considerable amount of money to do that, and so they are conscious of the need, and it seems like they're willing to be involved.
Well, I mean, personally involved, not just writing a check. I mean, they have technical folks that can work on these things too. So,
yeah. Well, that's probably a question that's better now for Cal-Am to address. Yeah.
Mr. Urquhart, how quickly can you get your trend data to staff?
Probably tomorrow.
Okay.
Is that already part of some of the data or the reports that you've submitted me? I just haven't seen it. It's buried in back.
Maybe, but it's probably just easier also to pull it out of our
Okay. Yeah.
If you could do that, I mean, flow, temperature, volume, if you have that data over a period of time, if you get it to Matt, because I would like that to be part of the letter that goes to the State Board.
Yeah, it's part of a brief synopsis
exactly.
And introduction of the issue.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then I guess the third point on my list would be, if staff can do everything it can to try to facilitate getting a CEQA lead, agency, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, and that's why I recommend to formalize it and put a letter out there to all the stakeholders that basically lists what we need in hand to proceed with permitting this issue. And I try to want to make that as clear as possible and help them get that information as best I can.
Okay. All right. Any other board questions? Okay. Sir? Do we have a speaker card from you?
I didn't. My name is Ray Von Dorn. I'm the general manager of the Carmel Wastewater District.
Okay. Could you speak up a little bit?
I just wanted to clarify a few things. You were talking about the 5 acre feet of water per week. This is a very dynamic situation, and that opportunity will end this year because we're putting in a microfiltration reverse osmosis treatment plant. And so the reason we did that, we had that 5 acre feet of water available in the past is because we flushed the golf course greens during that period. So that pretty much option is pretty much gone. The water that will be available from the district in the future is what surplus water that might be available that we will not, under contract, have to send to the forest. And that's probably going to be limited. We will have about 20 acre feet pre-irrigation season available for other uses. What we do have and what we're going to start to study as part of a district project is a concentrate from a from our reverse osmosis system, and that's quite a bit of water. That could be up to 300 acre feet a year available for use, and that's from a mass basis. That's the same quality as tertiary water. It's concentrated, so the concentration is higher. But as far as the mass quantity of stuff in that water, it's the same as the tertiary water we use now. And we're going to start that study immediately. We're in the process of signing a contract for that. And what we'll be looking at is to study that water and look at the constituents in that water to see what impact that might have on the lagoon. We're not, at this point, as much concerned about the conventional type of pollutants, but rather emerging pollutants that might have a long-term impact. So there's actually quite a bit going on from the district's perspective, and all of the people you talk to today will be involved in that study with us in deciding whether that's feasible and what funds will be available to look at that in the future. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
Well, let me ask you this then. What is then going to be available next summer?
Next summer at the maximum, if it's a low water volume year, 20 acre feet, and if it's a good year, then whatever we don't have to send to the golf courses will be available for discharge also. It could be as little as 20 and as much as they don't need. Right now, we're discharging a little bit of water to the lagoon because the reservoir is full, reservoir has enough volume.
Let me just back you up, because I don't make the conversions between acre feet and MGD that quickly. Are you going to have more or less than 1.5 MGD over a four-day period?
I hate to be vague, but it depends on the weather.
Okay.
But probably less.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
I have a question. Where does the outfall pipe run in? Does it run close to the lagoon?
The ocean outfall.
That little sign that says, let's see, where are we here? That Granite Bluff sign. Right below there, if you draw a line straight across from South Arm out, it goes out that direction.
It goes right out there? Okay. So it says here, the wastewater which is not recycled is discharged to the Carmel Bay through the outfall. How many gallons a day goes through there now?
About half of our discharge goes out the outfall, mostly
Is still treated, tertiary water?
Secondary treated.
So what would be the... Could you just bring a riser valve up there and open it into the lagoon?
I'm sorry?
Go through the lagoon and out into the ocean.
What goes into the lagoon is a function of the time of year and the weather. There's no need to put the water out there in the wintertime, so we would have it in the wintertime, but there's no need to discharge it in the wintertime, so we wouldn't put it out into the lagoon.
But we could put it out right now.
We are putting it out right now.
You're discharging to the ocean.
We're discharging a little bit, about 120,000 gallons a day, to the lagoon, well, to the riparian habitat, and that seeps into the ground and gets into the lagoon. It has an impact.
I'm just looking. I'm stretching to try to get the water to the lagoon.
All right.
Yeah, I think the problem that you might be having, Mr. Hayashi, is we've got two separate sets of criteria that we need to evaluate for a discharge to the bay versus a discharge to an estuary. And so it's a totally separate set of requirements and a separate permit.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the next agenda item. Thank you.